Hey there guys, welcome to the March 11th edition of the NFL Sunday Supplement. With me today we've got Chappers.
Hi there guys.
Dave.
Hi there guys.
And Arnie.
Hello.
Full house today. It's been a very, very busy, intriguing week in the NFL, I'm sure we'll all agree.
Oh yeah.
Much, much to talk about.
Mm. Why, what's happened?
Well, I don't know if you've heard, but Peyton Manning has been released by the Colts.
Oh my god, really? My god, that's news to me.
Dun, 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 dun.
And there have been a grand total of 12 teams showing interest.
Well, they've got in touch.
Yeah, they've got in touch. They've shown interest. Let's be honest, everyone should be interested right now in Peyton Manning.
Well, pretty much. I'm pretty sure the Packers, they're probably not too.
I would love to have Aaron Rodgers backed up by Peyton Manning on my team.
Yeah.
That would be superb. Every other down, elite quarterback.
I like beating Peyton Manning.
Run a two quarterback.
It brings, you know, some sort of sense of confidence in my team, that knowing that we've just beaten Peyton Manning. I like this.
Fair enough. So, obviously that's the big news of the week. Have you guys all watched the press conference?
I didn't.
I haven't seen the press conference, but I've read up on it big time, and it's shocking because they don't think that there is ever going to be an owner with the face of the franchise having a good send off. They don't think that will ever happen again.
Well, the term that has been most used is classy, and frankly, it is fairly appropriate. Mm-hmm. I mean, you watch it, there's genuine emotion between the two of them. Like, Peyton and him are fighting back tears consistently throughout this press conference. And, you know, Manning handled himself really well. They both ultimately come out. There's no blame laid at either person. They're saying, look, this is best for both of us. But Ursay himself said, you know, we are a few years away from competing, and Peyton wants to go get another ring. We're in a really bad position salary cap wise. This move makes sense for all parties involved, as difficult as it is for me and Colts fans to see Peyton go. And they're retiring his number, of course. I personally could not imagine.
I didn't know that was guaranteed.
No, that was guaranteed.
They said it.
Oh, right, okay.
He said it during the press conference. There'll never be another 18 in Indianapolis.
Understandably. I mean, Peyton Manning owns that number.
It is the right
thing. That's it, yeah. Retire the number with the elite player that you're now... no longer have.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of retiring numbers, except in incredible circumstance, and this is one of
those. He's an incredible circumstance.
Yeah,
he's an incredible player.
Things, like, you've got your players like your Dan Marino, you know, your transcendent players that define your franchise, not just for the time they're there, but, you know, forever, etched in the history, and Peyton is that guy. So, it was all really well handled. Now, obviously, a lot of teams need quarterbacks in the NFL, same old story every year. There's a lot of options because, let's face it, there are a lot of teams that you think if you just put Peyton there, they can become a contender.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Teams like Dolphins, who are heavily talked about, the Cardinals, all of a sudden, I mean, you just look at those teams and you think right now, yeah, they're fairly mediocre, but you put Peyton there and everyone's assuming Reggie's going with him.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. Then, you know, you're getting a number one receiver, or a number two, a really reliable one, and you get Peyton Manning. So obviously it's a great move. So the teams that
have come forward to show interest in Peyton Manning are the Arizona Cardinals, Seattle Seahawks, Washington Redskins, Miami Dolphins, the Kansas City Chiefs, Denver Broncos, and the New York Jets.
Yeah.
And they're all the teams that have come forward to show interest in, well, real interest in Peyton Manning as well. So, to be honest, out of them, there are a few that we can knock off the list.
Well, we'll go
pretty quickly.
Everyone can just shoot out a couple of their favourites.
Yeah.
I'll go with mine first. Personally, I think Miami.
Yeah.
We've all heard Marshall Faulk this week, I assume, saying that apparently he's going to stay in the AFC so that they can have the all-Manning Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I personally don't believe that particularly.
I don't believe it's going to happen, but you know, it's a better idea than having them both in the NFC or both in the AFC.
But I don't think it's going to turn out to be the case. I think he'll go wherever the best situation is. And to be honest, I look at Miami as the front runners now simply because I really do look at that team and, you know, they believe they're ready to win now. I was quite high on the Dolphins last year as a bit of a dark horse to make the playoffs, but I really do feel if I mean, you look at the offense. There's some pieces there. If you get Riley Reiff in the draft, you really, you know, you solidify that O-line with Jake Long at left tackle, Reiff at right tackle, with Pouncey in the center. You've got Reggie Bush and Brandon Marshall there already. You add Reggie Wayne and Peyton to that, you've got a rock solid starting 11.
I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, actually, that I think that the best move for the Dolphins would be to get Peyton Manning, because that sorts out your quarterback. Then you've already got Jake Long, who is a total freak and, you know, is totally dominant on that side.
He'll be fully healthy next year.
And use that draft pick seasons. That you've got. Use that top 10 draft pick. Get yourself another offensive lineman for the other side. Have Jake Long and someone to help Jake Long with that protection, because any quarterback behind Jake Long and, let's say, Riley Reiff, for instance, I mean, that's dominant. That's dominant protection there. It's going to be really difficult for defences, even the elite defences, to break through that in time to stop the pass going ahead. And when you've got a guy like Peyton Manning who likes to hold onto the ball for no less than 3 seconds,
that's the real reason I think it would really work. Peyton has been playing behind a decimated offensive line for the last few years in Indy. He's made that offensive line look vastly superior to what it is. I think that would be really strong.
It'd be a very clever idea. And the thing, it is also dependent on how long they have Peyton Manning for. Because the other side of that is, if Peyton Manning signs to, let's say, a 2-year deal, that's a year for, you know, to see if this is...
Peyton said he wants a 3-year deal.
3-year deal, even better. That's even better for a team like the Finns, because they can, you know, if they've got that quarterback there at the moment. Who do you have at the moment?
At the minute, we've got Matt Moore.
Matt Moore. I think Matt Moore learning from Peyton Manning for a year is going to do wonders for Matt Moore.
I wouldn't think they'd look at Matt Moore as the guy that's going to come in after Manning.
He won't take over. He's a solid backup.
He won't.
I can see it. We'll draft someone in the next 1-2 years, maybe, just to learn off him.
I mean, I'm not talking about necessarily, you know, whoever, when Peyton Manning leaves, whoever your backup is becomes your number one. But it's going to be massively good for that person to get a lot of lessons from Peyton Manning, to take on board a lot of what he sees, to learn from him. Because Peyton Manning, let's face it, he's the best. He is the best
when
around.
Fully healthy,
when he's fully healthy.
Fully healthy, in my opinion. Apart from maybe, I thought Aaron Rodgers was that good last year. I'm perfectly happy to currently.
But I would love to see Aaron Rodgers' yearly stats next year against Peyton Manning's yearly stats, because I mean they're both elite. They're both going to be elite. The question is,
I don't know if you can guarantee it, Matt. I think he will be very good. I mean, very good. He'll get around 4,000 yards. You know, he'll get his numbers. The thing that I think, it's kind of interesting with Miami, is Matt Moore has that much more value to Miami if they get Peyton Manning in, because Peyton Manning will take all the practice reps. He did that in Indy, which is why Curtis Painter was so unprepared. Mm-hmm. He never got to practice with the first team ever. Peyton does it all. He coaches the receivers. You know, he is the offensive coach, coordinator. He's everything in practice. And because Matt Moore has experience working with those guys, I think he has that much more value as a backup.
He has more experience than Matt Flynn, so if we do come out and say, Matt Moore's available, then that actually makes, that rocks things up a little bit at quarterback.
Suddenly
teams like the Browns may look at someone like Matt Moore and say, actually, he's played quite consistent for the Finns. He's had more games than Flynn as well. Less of a risk, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, you've had a kind of divided opinion on whether Peyton Manning would be a great fit or not in Miami. What do you think now?
To be honest, I've heard a lot of reports that he is getting better. This neck surgery, this neck problem, isn't so much of a problem now. It will affect him when in his 50s, perhaps. It's more, will he be ready for the next season? Will his arm strength and velocity in the throwing come back?
Have you seen the video of him throwing at Duke?
I did. It was too short, though. It was all right, but it was a very, very short
snippet. You can take a lot of things from that video. You can look at it and go, oh my God, Peyton Manning's back. Or you can look at it and go, well, it's not enough.
You can see that the deep ball is there, though.
Yes.
Apparently, he was struggling, like a few months ago, he was struggling to throw like further than 25, 30 yards with any zips. So there's clearly improvement there. I think the main thing from the health risk perspective, from what I've heard, is that he is no more of a health risk than anyone else once he starts playing again. If the nerves have regenerated, it doesn't actually affect his, you know, his physical well-being in terms of being a health risk. It's just a case of whether he can play to the level that is required.
I have one question mark on Peyton Manning, and that is, let's say that he gets a big sack. Let's say Ndamukong Suh breaks through and sacks the crap out of him wherever he is. When he gets up from that, is his neck injury suddenly going to become a big issue again?
Apparently it's not a degenerative injury. So.
Well, I mean, that's what we hope. That's what I hope, certainly. Because, to be honest, I've always liked Peyton Manning, and I would love to see Peyton Manning come back next year and prove all the naysayers wrong. I'd like him to prove people like me right. Well, I have said I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure Peyton Manning can come back and go to whatever team he ends up at and make that team into a playoff caliber team. The question is, will he be able to take the hits as well? That's the only question mark that I have left. I think his ability is still there. I think his skill is still there, and I think his knowledge of the game is definitely still there.
Yeah, the knowledge is always going to be unparalleled. The thing that, to me as well, that puts Miami kind of in the best position is simply because Philbin hasn't had time to implement his offense yet.
Yeah, so it can still be Peyton Manning's offense.
Yeah, you just bring Peyton in. You're going to have to teach him a new scheme anyway. You don't have to disrupt anything. You just bring Peyton in. He does it all, and you know everything's gravy in that regard.
It's why if we bring Reggie Wayne in as well to help him out. He's got that safety blanket. We'll have a really good receiving core at last.
Brandon Marshall would be the most physically talented guy he'd have ever worked with.
That's exciting.
As great as Marvin Harrison was back in the day, he didn't have the tools that Brandon Marshall does.
And I still think that Brandon Marshall, I know that he's you know, classed as a tier below those top tier guys like Fitzy and CJ.
He doesn't have the consistency.
I personally think that with a guy like Peyton Manning, he can have that consistency. And I think that if Peyton Manning does end up in you know, Miami with the Dolphins, I think that Brandon Marshall could have a ridiculous year next year. I know that not many people look at the Pro Bowl as anything at all, but I watched Brandon Marshall like a hawk in the Pro Bowl, and I thought he was superb. I know that some of the catches he made, he was wide open on, but he made some catches that were tight, he made some catches that were difficult, he made plays. And I think with a quarterback like Peyton Manning, with a guy that's so, you know, so well assured in the league, I think that he can take Brandon Marshall to that next level of his career.
Brandon Marshall's been at that level. When he was back with the Broncos with Jay Cutler, they were putting up monster numbers together, huge numbers. The reason Miami traded so much for him, he was very close to being in that tier, closer than he possibly is now. He was a lot more effective there. The only issue with Marshall is consistency. You can ask anyone, I think they will say Marshall has all the talent you could possibly want. He has everything you could want from a receiver. It's just his drops. He leads the league in drops over the last 3 years. That's
what quarterbacks has he had over the last 3 years?
Quarterbacks don't affect your drops that drastically.
I agree.
If you're having that many drops, it's clear he's admitted it himself that he needs to work on his hands. But if he gets that sorted, it's going to be a fearsome tandem, even if he's playing at, you know, the level he's played for the last 2 years.
It just depends which one of his multiple personalities turns up to play.
Yeah.
I mean, he seems to love playing against the Jets, but then other teams not so much.
Well, I think he's one of those sort of divery type players as well. I think he'll be more motivated with Manning, so that might sort of push his game. I always worry with these type of receivers that, you know, once the team starts going down the pan, the effort just falls off. I mean, well, he's been Randy Moss throughout his career.
Well, he's voiced so many times about what he could do with an elite quarterback. If we do give him Peyton Manning, he's got to step up now. No excuses, bro. You have to step up.
Yeah, that's crunch time. If you're going to give for any receiver a guy like Peyton Manning, you have to put up those numbers. If you don't, you're just not a good enough receiver.
If he doesn't step up, Reggie will just become the number one.
Absolutely. But I do have faith in Brandon Marshall, and I'm sure that there will be something special happening in Miami if Peyton Manning goes there.
I would agree.
We've spoken a lot about Peyton Manning in Miami.
Just because it's most likely.
I know, but, you know, for argument's sake, let's throw another team in there.
I personally actually don't see him. I'd like to see him go to Miami, but personally, I see him going to the Cardinals.
Okay.
I'm excited about seeing the whole Peyton Manning throw to Fitzy, because, again,
Brandon Marshall,
seeing this is
Peyton
going from the Pro Bowl again, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers, we saw what he could do what Fitzy could do when he had a good quarterback.
Well, we saw what Fitzy can do with an elite quarterback with Kurt Warner.
Exactly.
He leads the league in every receiving category and goes absolutely nuts in the playoffs.
That was Peyton Manning.
Every record.
The idea of Peyton Manning and Larry Fitzgerald is terrifying.
Yeah.
I am actually scared of that. I'm quaking right now.
Peyton, Fitzy, and Reggie Wayne is as.
That could bring the Cardinals up to a hell of a level, especially with the division they're in.
the thing with the Cardinals, the only stuff I see holding it back, one, the Bidwells are notoriously stingy owners. Like, they make the Glazers of the last few years look really, really generous. So, you know, that's saying a lot. And if they do sign him, they're going to have to release Kevin Cobb. And he's got an $8 million roster bonus due, I think it's the 16th. So they'll have to get the move done sharply, because they're going to have to release Cobb.
That's a question. Where would Cobb go? Who would show interest in Cobb?
He's like Flynn. I think those would come the two guys that Cleveland would really look at, because they're both from the scheme that Holmgren, who's the GM now in Cleveland, implemented in Green Bay, both West Coast
offenses, yeah.
And I think he'd feel good about either one of those. Cobb is one of those players that's just really hard to evaluate, because he hasn't had a consistent string of games. He's been given those two starting opportunities with the Eagles and the Cardinals, and he's just been concussed. And it's just difficult. He's played okay behind two porous offensive lines. He's shown the ability to put up the numbers, so he's hard to evaluate. But then so is Flynn's two games. It becomes really interesting there. But Arizona, I think, makes more sense than a lot of people would think, because I watched all their games last year. Toward the end of the year, their D was bordering on elite. They were playing fantastic football. They've managed to retain Calais Campbell. The offense, they're going to get a new tackle to replace Levi Brown, which means whoever's playing quarterback is a lot safer than he currently is. I think they could be really good team. They've got the cap space to get it done. They play in the dome.
Always convenient to hide from the from Mother Nature.
Yeah, and even if it's got an open roof, you can close it. Just, it's in Arizona. Doesn't rain much there, so they'll be fine out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
And I think as well for the Cardinals, because apparently the Seahawks are the team that's making the biggest push, from what I've heard. Apparently they're the ones that have really, really looked hard into this early and are willing to give him big money to go there. And I think from the Cardinals' perspective, it makes as much sense to get him to stop the Seahawks doing so, because they've got to catch up with the Niners, who I think should be a good team next year, barring some massive drop off that I can't see coming. And they don't need to be trying to catch up with both the Niners and a Peyton Manning-led Seahawks team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it brings you back to my original point. Any team with Peyton Manning is a really scary team.
Yeah, and you look,
it's a really scary
you look
team.
At what they did with Kurt Warner. It's so alike the Warner situation, it's almost scary. And Wisenhunt and Manning are apparently good friends. They play golf in Glendale every year.
Golfing buddies.
Wisenhunt's an offensive guy. He happily tailored the offense to Kurt Warner's strengths. So
he'd probably be more than happy to tailor
to the exact same scenario. It's odd. So I heard someone say it shouldn't happen because lightning doesn't strike twice, but that's the most asinine argument I have ever heard. Peyton Manning won't work in Arizona because Kurt Warner did.
Great argument there. Yeah, great argument.
Yeah. Any other teams you guys have been thinking about?
Well, the Broncos have come in today with a push.
I don't see that happening.
Nah.
I don't see it happening, but they've just come in today with a real push.
I do like that they've had the reality slap of, maybe Tebow is not the entire future.
I think, if anything, that kind of PR move is to sort of motivate Tebow a little more, maybe make sure he doesn't get comfy. Not that I think Tebow's the sort of player that would let that happen anyway. But
He's always appeared to be very humble. Whether I believe it or not is another question, but he does appear to be humble, so if it is a PR campaign to sort of motivate him a bit more to work on his passing, then perhaps Tebow could be could be one of those really great quarterbacks next year. But I also don't see the Broncos going to Peyton Manning. They'd have to pay an awful lot, and I think they've got other needs that could possibly necessitate that money.
Peyton wants to go to a contender, and I don't think the Broncos are there. I mean, the D is up and coming. It's not there yet. There are still some big needs there, especially with Champ Bailey getting up in years now.
Yeah.
But there's just not enough there on offense that I'd feel good about him working with. Willis McGahee is getting up. He gets injured a fair bit these days. They don't have any other running backs, so I really can't think of why he'd pick Denver over some of the options he's going to have, because it is down to Peyton where he wants to go.
It is.
He's going to have options. The Seahawks are an intriguing option to me, because they're not a bad side. They've got sort of good young O-line there. The D played really well last year with some young unknown players. I mean,
and they've got a very good rushing game as well.
Re-signed Marshawn Lynch.
Of course they did. Of course.
So I feel that that would be a pretty good option. Sidney Rice as well would finally have a legitimate quarterback to work with again. So it'd be quite nice to see Sidney Rice actually, you know, doing things again, because I really enjoyed watching him in Minnesota with Favre. Chappers, anyone you're thinking about?
To be honest, I can't see why Peyton Manning wouldn't want to go to Miami. I don't see why any other team's in the mix, purely because Manning already lives in Miami. He knows the area. What a great place to play. He knows Dan Marino. If anyone can tell him what it's like playing for that franchise, he's the one guy qualified to do so. Stephen Ross will give him money instantly. He will throw everything at him, so why not? You've got 3-4 years left to play in. Get as much as you can. We'll look after him at O-line. We've got Jake Long, Pouncey, Incognito. We'll give him a shiny new right tackle in Riley Reiff. He's got better weapons to play with. The only downside really is it is a hard division that we're in.
The amount of press as well.
Yeah.
Surrounding.
Yeah, that's been another thing really. The press have been absolutely horrendous.
They'll go nuts if he goes to Miami. Imagine how big those Patriots-Dolphins games will be.
They've already gone nuts. They've been absolutely harassing and hounding him while he's been there. Didn't you say they chased him with a helicopter?
Yeah, they did. They followed him with a helicopter. He actually had to get out of his car and tell the media to stop following him. This was literally hours after he just finished his conference with Jim Irsay. Seriously, we're just all over him.
The thing is, there's speculation that this might, you know, the media having this kind of frenzy trying to get hold of Peyton Manning and get information on Peyton Manning may have some effect on what choice he makes on where he actually goes to play. I disagree with it entirely, because to be honest, anywhere he goes, he's going to have that media chasing him, because everyone involved in the NFL wants to know where Peyton Manning is going to go.
It has nothing to do with Maya. He could fly to Seattle tomorrow, the same thing's going to happen. So it's just, that's just how it is. I mean, the interesting one with Miami was LeBron and Dwayne Wade trying to recruit him to come to Miami. Like,
we've got an elite basketball team, we now want an elite football team, come on.
Let's just go get all the big stars and put them in South Beach. They can all have a big party. It's madness. I think him and Dan Marino would be interesting though. Any other teams, anyone? Do you want to talk about the Jets at all? Heard about the Jets?
Yeah, I've heard about the Jets. It's not going to happen, and that's the conversation over with that. It's just not going to happen in general.
I don't see how it could. They've got cap problems to some degree. Like, they've given Bart Scott the permission to seek a trade. One of their key defensive players, even if he is getting up there in age. And they'd have to release Sanchez.
Sanchez has already come out and said he's going to release.
Well, that's not a bad thing. I'm not as down on Sanchez as other people, because I'm still a realist about this. He's been in the league 3 years. He's still not quite the finished product, and it is tough playing in New York. Eli was hated for the first 4 or 5 years. People were saying they should cut Eli during that first Super Bowl run, during that season. You're like, Eli's terrible, we need to cut him and get someone else. And he won that Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden public perception totally changed. But I think it was a tough market.
Yeah, I'd say it's up until about November. I was hearing a lot of hatred towards Eli from Giants fans.
It's always going to be there. Yeah. A lot of them are so scarred by his first 3 or 4 years. And you still see the old game where he plays like the rookie Eli. He's still got that inconsistency to him.
But the nice thing is that inconsistency has now become a smaller part of his game. It's now the bigger picture is Eli's very good quarterback rather than Eli's rubbish quarterback who sometimes is very good. It's now the other way around. But what he needs to do is get rid of that sometimes is rubbish part of the equation so that he is playing solid football. But I think it could be done. I think next year I don't see why he wouldn't have a better season than he had this season. I'm not saying they're going to win a Super Bowl next year, but I'm saying that there's no reason for Eli to take a step back now. There's no reason why he shouldn't be exactly where he is or taking steps forward, to really cement himself in the history books.
He should well do. The one thing I think of with New York as well, we're saying to me, you'd be crazy if you went to Miami. Now, if he goes to New York in the same city as his brother, still in the same division as Tom Brady, with the New York press, with Rex Ryan, I don't know if I want. I could.
This is a message to Peyton Manning. Do not go to New York. No. I know you probably don't need to be told this, but don't go to New York. No, you don't need that hassle, and neither do we.
It would be, oh my word. ESPN would go nuts. Absolutely nuts. Are we done on the Peyton situation? Anyone got anything else to add?
I like Peyton Manning.
Do you want to do a Darnell Dockett, you know, and recruit him?
Come to Miami. I don't need to sell it to you. It's Miami, baby. Just
it's
come.
Hot. It's nice. Nice weather. Nice weather.
Don Shula's Steakhouse is damn good as well.
Oh, yeah.
While we're still on the Manning subject, take the Titans off the Stockwatch. We aren't going for him.
Yeah, they've got their old man at quarterback.
Yeah. I love my Hasselbeck and Jake Locker. Keep that. We don't need Manning. I want to beat Peyton Manning, not have him on my team.
Good luck with that, definitely.
I suppose we should go on to the other small bit of news that's been undershadowed a little
bit. Tiny little thing that happened last week, the Bounty Gate scandal.
I think I'll let the two Tampa fans
I'm getting this off my chest first, right? I have disliked Sean Payton for a number of years just because of the way he carries himself.
Can I just say quickly, massive props to the Buccaneers for injuring Sean Payton. I was very happy about that.
It's just, I was not surprised when I found out that Sean Payton knew about it.
No, neither was I.
Nothing about it. Not surprised in the slightest.
You can see it in his eyes. He has the eyes of a man who's into dodgy dealings.
He kind
of
carries himself. He will do whatever it takes. Same way Belichick, although I don't think Belichick has
go to that level.
Ever stooped to this. Although, of course, he didn't implement it. Greg Williams did. But
yeah. for fans who have been hiding under a rock and maybe listening to the Peyton Manning stuff, like what exactly has gone on with this? What is the whole?
I thought you were going to go where I don't want it to go. Basically. It turns out that since Greg Williams first got there, the Saints Super Bowl year 2009, for the last 3 years they've been running a pay for performance scheme. Now these are
quote
in quotations, definitely. Now this happens all across the league. You get little under the table bets. You know, players going, "Oh, if you make this play on special teams, I'll give you $500." You know, for the special teams players, this is significant money. It actually means something to them. And you know, the NFL can't get rid of that. That's going to happen. I have no issue with that. It's
the problem is that this has overstepped the boundary. This has taken it to the next really bad level.
Now, players, I've got no doubt in my mind as well that players have probably done the same thing, paying players to injure other players. It probably has happened. But what makes this such a bad thing is it was run by the team,
by the coaches. Exactly.
The top down, the GM knew about this. The head coach knew about this. The defensive coordinator was the guy who instigated this. There are 23 to 27 players apparently implemented. It was a 50,000-page document, anti NFL, 3 years worth of research into this, and the retribution that Goodell is going to take on them, it's going to be unlike anything I think an NFL team has ever seen.
And I think in the Saints' ballpark, they're viewing this as, oh dear, the metaphorical poop has hit the fan.
Absolutely. I mean, I've heard a lot of Saints fans on the internet trying to justify going, oh, this goes on all over the league. Yes, it probably does, but not run on a team-wide level.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what has made this so over top. And having watched that championship game those years ago with Favre and the game the year after with Kurt Warner, I'm not surprised when I heard it, because a lot of those hits were filth. Totally unnecessary, massively late hits. It was. I remember especially the high low
where he hit in the bottom and then
goes up high. Someone comes in low. Apparently, Favre thought he broke his ankle on that play. That was one of the worst, most disgraceful hits I've ever seen. How it didn't get flagged at the time, I don't know. And there's no place for it in sport at all. I know. I'm all about the contact element of this game, all about the danger, but this is. No, you don't do that.
That's one of the things I've heard a lot of people arguing about, is that, you know, this is a physical game and it involves physical violence, and a lot of people like the game purely for the violence. That's fine, but when you've got organised violence, well, I mean, this really was organised on a high level.
When you're playing the game, you're not intending to injure people. It happens because of the nature of the game. When you're seeking to injure someone, I mean, technically that's illegal. That is a crime. Yeah. That is assault.
It is. It is, you know, aiming to hurt someone. To actually want someone to leave the field on a stretcher for the benefit of your team is not the way to be playing this game, nor the way to be playing any game. Any game on the planet is about sportsmanship, and unfortunately it seems that in this instance the Saints have left sportsmanship at the door and moved on with profit. And the problem is, and this is something that Rich Eisen brought up in his podcast, love your podcast by the way, Rich, that
we don't need to promote his podcast.
Oh no, of course not.
Call him love your podcast. We'll see if he's a close and personal friend.
Oh yeah. But one of the key things that he brought up was that the difference is that, you know, you take a physical game like American football, which is violent and everything. You know, these little transactions going on under the table might seem petty and small right now, but it only takes one outsider to come in and say, hey, this guy's going to give you $1,000 to make a play, I'll give you $150,000 to make a play. That's where organised crime gets involved. And to be honest, this is just one step away from organised crime, which then brings us on to what is Roger Goodell going to do? Because he has to stamp down on this, given Roger Goodell's stance on player safety and making the NFL a safe game.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
In terms of timing, it couldn't have happened at a worse time for a team.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a brutal punishment. I mean, you look at Spygate.
Yeah.
The Pats lost a first round pick and the club was fined, Belichick was fined. Now, here we're looking at 23 to 26 players, apparently. Not all of them with the Saints anymore, I think. Jonathan Vilma, who was apparently the ringleader defensively, he's going to be released.
Yep.
He's on a big load of money. They're not going to want anything to do with him after
this,
I don't think.
That's the end of that, no.
But they've got a load of players. I'm thinking, like, minimum 4-game suspensions. Minimum,
yep.
I think. Greg Williams is probably going to be suspended for a year.
I've heard rumours of 3 years. A three-year suspension, only because he headed the thing.
To me, you could kick him out of the league, and I would be totally fine with that.
Yeah.
With no possibility of reinstating him. I would be totally behind Roger Goodell if he did that. John Madden came out this week and said, you know, he knows Goodell quite well personally. And he was like, after the punishment he gives out, I can tell you this, no team is ever going to consider doing this again.
No, absolutely.
Like, not even an option.
And the thing is, it has to be done now.
Yeah.
Now is the time to do it. I mean, yeah, people might say, oh, it's horrible that this has come out now with all the stuff going on in the NFL right now in the off-season. But it's better this come out now, because Roger Goodell has been putting a big stance on safety and player safety and making sure the game, you know, is not actually going to end people's careers or lives. Because let's not lie about this. People have died playing this physical and violent game. But when you're actually promoting the violent side of it, the physicality is always going to be promoted.
The physicality and the violence are fine. It's the intent.
Yeah,
when
the intent
to hurt is there, it is just unjustified. I mean, even look at like contact sports like boxing and UFC. They're not intending to, like, literally cripple a guy. Look at UFC. They can.
Yep.
They can easily do it. They get these guys in, you know, one of their arm bars. They can snap the guy's arm in half if they really want. They don't do it because there should be that brotherhood. I thought Sapp put it pretty well on Title Access last week. He was like, anyone even came into my locker room and said anything along those lines, he'd get out.
Yeah,
he would
straight out locker room.
He would never come back.
Yeah.
And
one of the other things that's come forward is Hargrove, who made that brutal hit. That final hit that ended Favre. He's come forward and he said that you know, it was a hit. It was a really intense hit. And he might feel slightly bad for it now, but there was no money involved. No one came to him and said, I want you to take $1,000 to knock Favre out of the game.
Yeah,
he made the play because
the
opportunity
NFL
appeared.
A video of Jonathan Vilma saying in the defensive meeting, I will give 10 grand to whoever can take Brett Favre out of this game.
But that's his prerogative.
He
can
say whatever he wants. It's like Darren Sharper. Did you guys hear his phone call like the day this all came out? He was like, this never happened. It totally did not happen. We got paid for plays like interceptions, forced fumbles, all the stuff, you know, that most people have no real issue with.
Yeah.
No, just come out and say, yeah, it happened.
Yeah, admit it. Don't lie about it. The more you lie about it, the more you dig a hole for it. And when the hole opens up and suddenly everyone finds out about all the dirty details of this.
The organization's admitted it happened.
Yeah.
It just looks like a moron.
Exactly. And the thing is, this risks a lot of careers. A lot of careers are big time on the line, if not over, because of this now.
You've got, I don't know what's going to happen to the, basically the coaches are the ones I'm not sure of what's going to happen, because there's no real precedent for that kind of thing. I think the players, minimum 4-game suspension. I think Vilma is going to get like a year possibly. Other players might get more, I don't know. You know, we don't really know their involvement.
Yeah.
And to what level. I don't know how it's going to affect the Saints' D, because a lot of those players are still on that D. I mean, they could be missing like half their starters for the first quarter of the season, first half of the season, whatever happens.
Yes!
In terms of... in terms of draft picks, I mean, using the, you know, Spygate thing as a guide, we know they're going to lose at least one first rounder now. They don't have one this year, so that'll be next year's.
Yeah.
I figure it's probably going to be their first next year, second this year, second next year, third this year, and maybe some change on top, maybe. But it's pretty much a wild guess. You know?
Yeah. Essentially, the Saints should, you know, look towards next year rather than this draft.
Well, to me, yeah, that's the kind of punishment that is brutal. It's going to have a big effect on.
It's
the
brutal. It's necessary, and it's, you know, it's absolutely agreeable. Yeah.
I'm a Bucks fan. I'd like seeing the Saints suffer to some degree. I don't want the franchise to be crippled by this, like utterly ruined. But they do need to be punished so heavily, no one will consider doing it again. I think that is the kind of punishment, losing four draft picks higher.
Yeah.
Never again.
The only problem is there are a lot of teams and a lot of players that are saying, look, this kind of stuff does happen, but with, like, it is on a pay for performance in the general sense of the terms, in a pay for performance kind of scenario, where they're saying, look, if you guys can sack three times in the first half, then the offensive line will put in $30, that's a $150 pot, you know, that's what you'll win. That kind of stuff can't, you know, probably won't be taken out.
You
but
can't stop it. It's players doing it amongst themselves. They
but,
can do it on the
yeah,
sideline.
But the thing,
then,
they can
get
do
home, he goes to a ATM, gives his mate $1,000. What can the NFL do to stop that?
But at the same time, they could do the very same thing with this scenario
they
here,
could,
saying, I want you to go knock, you know, I want you to take the Atlanta Falcons quarterback's head off. If you do that, I will then give you $50,000.
You know, that could be happening in any sport.
I just want to say that I feel really bad for the Saints fans. They're involved in all this, because after what they've been through, what with the hurricane and everything, and rebuilding their city,
with
this whole Super Bowl win, which was an absolute fairy tale, it's now going to be shadowed by this.
It's absolute
unsportsmanlike brutality, and you just got to feel for them. This could potentially ruin their franchise for years now. If all these roster changes, happen,
big long term effects.
Yeah, if they have these draft picks taken away, if they lose players like Vilma,
teams are going to be coming at them hard next year.
Oh,
they're going to get everyone's best game. When they next play the Vikings, they're going to, you know, teams like the Vikings, the Cardinals, those teams that really will clearly feel aggrieved at the situation.
Yeah,
you know, they have a giant bullseye on them, and they had a bullseye on them before. I feel bad for Drew Brees, because he strikes me as the sort of player, probably didn't know a huge amount about it. He always has seemed like a stand-up kind of guy.
Yeah, he's quite genuine.
That's probably why he won't sign his tender. He's too scared to get on the field. that's why he's holding back on signing.
Yeah, he's not going to have Carl Nix to protect him in all likelihood either. So,
speaking of signing, should we move on to some of the free agency news?
Going for the tags.
Yeah, I mean, there's been...
Tags, didn't we finalize them last week?
Haven't there been more since last week?
No, they ended the tags. It was last week. There were a couple of last-minute ones.
Yeah, there was
Mainly kickers,
yeah, bunch of kickers. We don't need to hugely talk about kickers. I mean, they are kickers. Don't think. There was the two safeties, Griffin and Goldson. The second that Polamalu restructured his deal, they both put the franchise tender on it because the money became less, which I thought was quite funny.
That's clever.
Avril, who we were discussed,
Cliff Avril,
was franchised by the Lions.
Yep.
Don't really need to go into that one. Any other surprise? Already commented on Anthony Spencer. I can't believe they're giving him that much money. And some kickers. Other than that, yeah, I think we did cover all that. Oh, and Brett Grimes.
Ah, yes.
Forget they
and who are we left with? There are some really good free agents left out there now.
The intention here was to discuss linebackers this week, because we've covered some
of
the other positions.
Cool.
Now, for linebackers, I mean, the big names you've got this year, I suppose you can consider Mario Williams, but I think we've already discussed him. He's going to get a load of money to go basically pretty much wherever he wants. The teams I've heard linked to him are apparently San Diego are going to make a big push for him. Seattle, I wouldn't be shocked to see Atlanta go hard after him, because they're not re-signing John Abraham. They badly need another pass rusher. I've heard the Bucks thrown in for some reason. I really don't see it happening.
Nah,
I've heard the Titans as well.
Titans would make sense if they can throw the money at him. The Jags as well.
Yeah.
But he's one of those players that's just, you know, in his prime,
yeah,
proven. These guys do not hit the market often.
Yeah.
I don't know why the Patriots and the Jets haven't been linked with this guy, because it's obvious they need pass rush more than anyone in the league, possibly.
Jets wouldn't have the cap room. No way they will have the cap room to sign him. The Patriots, they could. It's just not a very Belichicky kind of move. He's not proven either in the 3-4, but then they did play a lot of 4-3 last year, so they do become a valid option, I suppose, but I just don't see it happening. They very rarely make big splashes in free agency, the Patriots. I've got no doubt as well there'd be teams willing to give more money than the Pats. The Belichick's got a system with the cap. They value a player at a certain amount. They won't go over that amount. That's your money. You take that or nothing. I think the only exception is probably Brady.
Yeah, but that is an exception, right there. Yeah,
not pay Tom Brady, and then Brady. Yeah, you know, he's took salary cuts before anyway to help him keep under the cap, because he's one of those kind of guys. So while we're looking at linebackers, then we got Curtis Lofton from Atlanta, leader of that D. Really good run plugger. He'd be a great two down backer for any team that plays a 4-3. I could see the Bucks making a run at him. Atlanta will try and re-sign him, I think, if they've got the room, because they really like him.
I'd say dependent on the offer that they're hearing.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota could. There's a lot of teams. He could even go to New York with the Jets, even the Giants. I mean, the one that intrigues me most is Tulloch. He had a great year last season for the Lions. Really good one. As a Buccaneers fan, I would love to see the Buccaneers sign him. He's perfect for the scheme. He's experienced in it. He wouldn't have to adjust too much to the playbook, I assume, unless they change it fairly drastically. We'd be able to move Mason Foster to the outside, which is what we're planning to do anyway. He's perfect for what the Buccaneers need right now.
He would definitely work under your scheme, because his scheme is very similar to what the Titans were.
It's the same scheme.
It's
a cover two base. That's what he's been playing his whole career. He was superb last year for the Lions.
It is really dependent on... I know we're slightly off topic on the Bucks here, but it does depend on what the Bucks do in free agency and with the draft.
They've got so much money, the D needs to be where they target in free agency, I think.
Well, yeah, true, but the thing is, you can't forget there's players like Vincent Jackson out there. We are still a contender for Vincent Jackson. There are other wide receivers out there as well.
But the thing is, the Bucks have that much money, they can go after him and then still go get another couple of guys.
I mean, it would be great if we could go get Vincent Jackson and then get two awesome D guys to sit on our D.
Tulloch isn't one of these guys that's in massive demands. He only got a 1-year deal from the Lions last year when he was a free agent, and he didn't get a huge amount of money. A lot of people don't know who he is. He's one of them kind of under the radar signings that a team could make that could really make a big difference, and that's he brings that kind of toughness and leadership as well that the Buccaneers just totally seem to lack toward the end of last season. I mean, to me, the Bucks need to do. There are two players I would be looking at, and that's him and Finnegan.
Colton Finnegan, cornerback.
Yeah,
yeah,
would fit into the scheme.
Yeah, absolutely. More importantly, fit into the scheme. He can help. Our rookies.
Yeah,
I mean,
positions of huge need. They're experienced.
That aggressive sort of nature to it as well.
One of the biggest issues that I had last year on the Bucks was the fact that we had nine rookies and two vets on our D, and out of those nine rookies,
it wasn't quite that bad. The safeties were vets, Sean Jones and Tanard Jackson.
I mean, things that seemed that there was a real lack of leadership.
Lack of tackles as well.
It was just that. It was terrible. What other backers have we got coming up out this free agency? I mean, Bart Scott's been given permission to trade, as we spoke about earlier. Not sure anyone's going to pick him up. He's on quite a big deal for this point in his career. Right. James Farrier, he'd been released by the Steelers.
Brandon Carr.
You're looking at that's corners, Brandon Carr.
Right, defensive backs.
Linebackers.
Alright.
Who else have we got? I think those are really the big ones. There's probably a few others.
Yeah,
I think you've got to look at the draft otherwise, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a weak draft, a lot of people consider it, for linebackers. There's a couple of interesting tweeners.
Yeah, Melvin Ingram's now been listed as an outside. He's gone from defensive end, now he's been listed as an outside linebacker.
It makes more sense. If you look at his measurables, there's just not that many defensive ends in the league that play at that size. He looks to me, especially when you see in the drills, he looked quite good at the drop-back stuff.
Yeah.
I think he would look really good in a free
That's where he shined, I think.
Yeah, that I think it was that level of athleticism probably really had those 3-4 teams thinking we could do a lot with this guy. Because he can play with his hand in the dirt, that's what he did in college. So he's a really intriguing prospect, because you could get so many different things from him if you get him playing well, if you get him understanding the game. You've got, what's his face, Quetchley from Boston College.
Yeah,
really opened up eyes at the combine, as I'm pretty sure we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Turned out he's a lot more athletic than people gave him credit for, a lot quicker. He really helped himself. He was an absolute tackling machine.
Just speaking on quickness, quickly, breaking news, Justin Blackmon runs a 4.48.
Yeah, that's around where people expected.
Well, the thing, there were question marks over, you know, was his leg injury going to hinder him that much that he would be, you know, less than 4.5. But, I mean, the fact that he's done that, it means that he's now cemented that, A, he's very, very fast. B,
it's about what people thought. He's not a burner, but people knew that.
Yeah, but they know that he's still got the speed in it, along with the talent. So, I mean, you know, all it does is it answers some of those question marks that were floating around last week.
Oh, it made me happy, though, regarding Blackmon. Mayock described Blackmon exactly how I did a few weeks ago on Path to the Draft.
Word for word?
In fact, he used the same phrase. Justin Blackmon is a mini fit.
Awesome. Nice.
That's how I've been describing him.
Well, well done. Well done.
Yeah, he said he's got the best ball skills I've seen since Larry Fitzgerald, if I remember rightly. I used
you
that.
You did indeed, yes.
So,
word for word.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I'm still quite high on Blackmon. Just watching that tape. Who else we got coming out of backer? Vontaze Burfict, who did the opposite of what Quetchley did at the draft. Absolutely fell. Angry, angry player.
Oh yeah,
can totally see him playing
going to the Lions.
He has Steeler written all over him.
Yep.
I've been saying this for the last couple of years. I was watching him playing for Arizona State. It was like, it actually is like they've just got a Steelers player playing in the middle. The way he hits and just runs, just
out to hurt people.
I think he'd work really well in a 3-4 because he's that kind of suicide mentality backer who will take on the blockers like Bart Scott does. Where he just runs into him head first. I was talking about him quite a lot earlier in the X's and O's segment. But you really do need that guy. They're quite hard to find because, you know, finding a guy with the mentality that he's not going to get those numbers because it's not his job all game. His job is to, you know, free up the other inside backer by running into the fullback or guards, you know, guys bigger than him, and just take them both out of the game. They're hard to find, but I think he's the sort of player that absolutely has the mentality and mindset to make that work.
Maybe he's on a pay-for-performance scheme as well.
No, I think he's just angry. Having heard interviews with the guy, I think he's just one of them angry, angry people. Like James Harrison, he's angry off the field, he's angry on the field, he is just angry. And yeah, you do need a guy like that, I think, sometimes. So it'll be interesting. Any other backers? I think we're probably good enough there.
Yeah.
So, do a division roundup?
Yep.
Yeah, let's move on to it.
We'll move on to the NFC North this week, home of the best team in the league during the regular season.
The Green Bay Packers.
Green Bay Packers, the Chicago Bears, who had their season ruined by injuries, I feel.
Yes, they did.
The Detroit Lions, and the very, very disappointing Minnesota Vikings. So, we'll start with the Vikings. We'll work our way to the top. We'll try and finish on a positive note. The Vikings.
Well, as of right now, they need a big overhaul on their roster. Really,
they're one of them teams that's quite difficult because you can still look at that roster and say there are some real, real quality players there at a number of positions. Jared Allen, as good as there is in the league.
Adrian Peterson.
From the 4-3.
Yeah.
Adrian Peterson, still, for my money, the best pure running back in the league.
Certainly now that he's okay. We put up some fantasy points.
Percy Harvin's a good player.
Very still versatile. Still got Hutchinson?
Yeah, he's getting up there now, though. He's not the player he was. He's serviceable.
What about the quarterback situation?
Ponder. They're going to stick with Ponder. Apparently, they're very happy with him. I thought he played well last year.
So do I. I think for the amount of pressure that he was under last year. He did very well. I saw a couple of games where he just looked excellent, and he looked like a star.
First game against Green Bay.
Yeah,
he looked really good.
He did.
Kept him in there, and he's going to get his best friend in the draft, his future best friend in Matt Khalil.
Yes,
he's going to buy him a lot of gifts in
the coming few years.
I mean, the problems they've got are just enormous. Their position's a weakness. Their secondary is horrible.
Yeah.
The only real good player they've got there is Antoine Winfield, who's really getting up there in age. I mean, the safety play was atrocious. Corner play was almost non-existent.
It's positional security. I mean, there's a lot of question marks over a lot of positions.
Look at the division they're in. They play the Lions and the Packers twice a year, and they can't cover.
No, they can't.
I'm amazed Jared Allen popped 22 sacks on that D, because teams were running it most of the year on him because they were building up such big leads.
Yeah,
I don't know how he did it. It's amazing, especially because they lost Ray Edwards as well. Kevin Williams isn't where he was either on the D line.
So, I mean, where do you see the Vikings going in the draft? I mean, would you say Matt Khalil was probably the definite
absolutely
there?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd say he's the best player on the board for what their needs are.
He may be the best player in the draft, apart from Andrew Luck, from a perspective of, you know, how
consistency
he's generally measured these things up. He's got all the size. He's not quite got like the NFL-ready size that Jake Long had coming out.
Yeah.
Long, literally, you know, he turned up at the draft, he could have put on the like pads and played in the NFL the very next day.
Yeah.
But he's got the size and the athleticism. If he adds that, you know, 20 pounds of bulk of muscle, he's going to be monstrous.
Yeah, it's simple, you just don't pass up on a talent like that.
No.
They come around very rarely. I mean, maybe once every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
These kind of guys come around.
You just can't say no.
Yeah.
You can't say no.
You know, your Joe Thomas, Jake Long level.
Yeah.
Tackles. If you can take them, you take them. The only thing more valuable than that guy is the franchise quarterback.
What about free agency? I mean, they've shown interest in Vincent Jackson again, which 2 years ago they were also showing big interest in Vincent Jackson.
It's similar to the situation you mentioned with Bucks going after Vincent Jackson. I think Vincent Jackson will go to a good team.
Yeah.
He's 29 now. And if he does go to a bad team, it says to me he's all about the money.
Yeah.
But I see him going to
for a ring.
One of the teams
he's looking
for a
ring.
Later, Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got him going to the Bears. I can't see it.
It makes too much sense. He's built like Brandon Marshall in terms of the size and as a downfield threat. And we saw what Jay Cutler could do with Brandon Marshall in Denver. Their best receiver, I think me and you were discussing this yesterday.
Yeah.
If you're the Bears, who's their number one receiver?
Knox.
Johnny Knox.
Said, yeah.
Johnny Knox. Johnny Knox, no disrespect to the guy. He's a good deep threat. He's kind of like maybe like Mike Wallace in his rookie year, the kind of guy you bring him in, he runs a streak, he can do the crossing routes, but if that is your best option, you've got problems.
Yeah, you got to go get some help. You need to get an extra weapon, at least one extra weapon
Jackson's
in there.
Vincent Jackson's a proven number one.
Oh yes, I'd say he's probably one of the number one free agents left now. But yeah, I see
there are some quality free agents.
I should have said at the wide receiver.
Wide receiver. He's absolutely the best one out there. It's quite a good class of receivers. But yeah, back to the Vikings. I mean, they could do with him, of course, the Vikings could. I like Harvin, but he's not a number one kind of. I think he's one of those guys that you move around, do a lot of things with, use him in the slot, use him outside, even use him in the backfield, as they have done a couple of times.
What kind of shout out do you think they'll give against any cornerbacks in free agency? Because obviously
their
corners are in need as well.
They have to go for a corner. There's a couple of good ones. Both, again, Brandon Carr and Finnegan both fit in. Whether they're willing to give the kind of money to Finnegan that he wants, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
But Brandon Carr would make a lot of sense. It's going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of guys chasing both of those players. There are a lot of teams that really need corner help. So it's going to be tough for them. They need linebacker help as well. EJ Henderson's getting up there in age. He just can't cover like he used to.
It all comes back to positional security. I mean, they've got a lot of guys on their roster that, you know, they're going to have to address certain positions, and they have to address them now, or else they're going to be looking at a season just like last season.
Well, the problem they've kind of got is the front seven is still okay. Kevin Williams is, again, he's getting up there. Jared Allen's getting up there, but they're still both very productive players.
Yes.
The other guys are okay. Chad Greenway's a top quality linebacker. Aaron Henderson played well last year. His brother, not so much. But yeah, it's just, the problem is getting players to plug and play in the secondary through the draft is really difficult.
Yeah,
corners, much like receivers and safeties, even tend to struggle in their first couple of years. So I can't see that quick turnaround. And offensively, they just need so much help. That O-line was really, really poor.
Yeah,
they could do with overhauling pretty much the whole thing.
Well, at least we know their number three draft is going. Yeah, their draft spot is going to be a big help for that team,
yeah.
And that's the beginning.
Yeah. They're just praying that someone goes up for RG3, because otherwise
yeah.
the Rams will take Khalil.
Absolutely, yeah. And then I'd say that moves us on to probably the Bears.
Yeah.
Moves us on to the Bears next.
Yeah, Bears did come third. I feel bad for the Bears. Their season, I don't often say, you know, a team definitely had its season derailed by injury, but they absolutely did. You cannot lose your starting quarterback, starting running back, when you do not have the receivers to
make up for it,
yeah,
really.
You were going about Caleb Haney being really poor last year. It's like, well, yes, but the O-line's not very good. He's got no one to throw to, and he didn't even have Forte in the backfield.
Yeah.
So,
and then you look at their defense, and you see that you know they've got age there. They've got age, and they're getting on. They've got four of their key defensive players are all above 30 years old. You've got Lance Briggs. You've got Julius Peppers and Charles Tillman.
Yeah.
You know, all four of them very productive players. But you've got to start thinking that, you know, this is the time where their careers.
No doubt that the window in Chicago,
it's starting to close. Yeah,
I think they're going to be really aggressive this off season. That's why I think Vincent Jackson's going to get a ton of money off them. I've also heard Mario Williams, which
I've heard that as well.
Mario Williams and Julius Peppers. Oh my word, that would be impressive to watch.
It's hard to imagine that they would get there though, because they'd have a lot of cap room would have to be made there.
But it would be so cool.
It would be very cool, but. You know, goes back to Peyton Manning. If Peyton Manning went to the Vikings, that'd be very cool. And went to the Bears, that'd again be very cool. But very cool doesn't cut it in the NFL.
It could happen.
It
they're,
could.
They're still a defense-minded team with Lovie Smith there as the coach. He's all about that D. But, I mean, the D is still what the Bears' D has been for the last few years. They're hard to run on because of Briggs and Urlach, who do such a good job. Peppers is monstrous. Still a great, great player. They could do with a couple of DTs. They got some play from the other defensive ends last year. Tillman's still solid. They run a cover two. The corners, you know, they get by every year. It's Tillman and someone else generally playing corner, it seems. But
and with $30 million cap room, they can make
a couple of moves.
Yeah, they can. But I mean, you know, they have to think very carefully about these moves. They have to be the right moves, because this is really the crunch time now in the next 2 years.
Yeah,
for the
way
Bears.
I kind of look at it is like they can afford to take those risks, in that because those players are getting up there in age, they can release them eventually and get themselves back into a reasonable position. I mean, defensively, they're just really solid. It's hard to see what they need. They can go with a corner. A defensive tackle would probably be my number one priority right then. The backers are fine.
Yeah.
Maybe get a couple of young guys to groom for the future.
Some depth.
And the safety play was pretty good for the most part, which you can't say about many teams last year. The safety play in the NFL was pretty shocking last season. Offensively, quite the opposite. They've got...
Yes, indeed.
They're going to release Haney, so they need a backup quarterback.
Yep.
Chad Henney's available.
I thought Khalil Bell, the running back that played from the last few games, he looked pretty good. So I think they'll be happy with him behind Forte. Forte is Forte.
Him.
He does everything you could want from a running back.
Oh, yeah.
We'll discuss receiver. They need one, maybe two. Really, I mean, they absolutely need the one. They need to get that guy. Because at the minute, I mean, Devin Hester and John Knox are fast.
Yeah.
They're small, and they just don't give you that many options. All they've got are a bunch of speedy smurf receivers.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. And the O-line is getting there compared to what it was a couple of years ago when Cutler was just under siege every game, play after play after play. It's getting there. They'll have Gabe Kareemi for the whole season next year, who apparently saw the light last season after being drafted by the Bears. Did you guys hear about that?
No, I was.
Born and raised in Wisconsin. Went to Wisconsin for college. Lifelong Packers fan. Drafted by the Bears. It was like, I have been wrong my whole life. I have seen the light. It's all about the Bears. That cracked me up.
Funny what being drafted by an NFL team will do to your loyalties, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, I expect them to go fairly offense heavy in the draft. They need to focus on building that O-line. Maybe get a receiver that can step in and do a job for them.
Yeah, someone like a Floyd or a Alshon Jeffrey, maybe.
Alshon Jeffrey apparently really put teams off in the interview room, so he could fall into the second round. I mean, considering he was, before last college year, he was being spoke about as a top 10 potential pick. We were saying it was going to be between him and Blackmon to be the number one receiver off the board. He's just dropped like a stone. So there's a few guys. I mean, I quite like Mohamed Sanu from Rutgers. He's not the fastest guy out there, but man, he makes a lot of catches.
Didn't he have a bad combine though? So
yeah, he's not the most athletic guy in the world, but he had over 100 catches last year.
Yeah, you can't ignore a stat like that.
Yeah. The worry is that he just doesn't have the athleticism to get open all the time. But I saw him make tough catch after tough catch after tough catch, and I think that's just as important as being able to get open.
Yeah, being able to get open as well as, you know, catching the ball. They go hand in hand, really. Yeah. One is as good as the other. Just situational.
Well, no, we were talking about it. I did forget about Earl Bennett, who I think is a very average receiver, but him and Cutler seem to have a bit of a connection. They played together in college, so he's quite a good little slot player, so they're probably happy with him. A couple of receivers, I really do think they're a very good team. I said last year that I thought the Bears were not given enough credit, considering, you know, they got to the championship game the year before. I remember telling you guys I really did think the Bears were a solid team and no one was speaking about them. And they proved me right until the injuries kicked in.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, the injuries showed where the Bears have got issues, and that's at their depth. Mm. They've got to add more to that. They've got to be prepared for when it hits the fan. They need to be able to say, right, well, this man can step, the next man up can come up, step in, and, you know, maybe not do as superb a job as, let's say, Forte, but can still do some sort of consistent job that helps out their passing game, that gets them some sort of run game going. But it's about the depth. They've got to add something there.
Did you guys see the percentage of yards that Forte made net last year for the Bears before he got injured? He was 51% of their offense. It was the highest, I think, since like the 50s.
Makes you wonder what MJD was.
He was second.
Second?
He was like 46, 47, which is ridiculously high.
It is. I'm surprised he didn't have more, to be honest. But hey.
Yeah, where did Darren Sproles come, Simon?
He actually set an all-time record.
Really?
For all-purpose yards, but that does include returning.
Does that include that game against Atlanta as well?
That would
have... You know, Drew Brees threw that touchdown.
Not because of that, because he had that really big kick return. I went for like 90 yards, but he didn't quite get the touchdown.
That didn't quite give me fancy points, but I still won it anyway, didn't I?
Anyway, moving on. Let's move on to...
One more thing just to say about the Bears quickly. One good thing I think came out of last season for them, in spite of, you know, the injuries and not making the playoffs, I think Jay Cutler did, it seemed, silence his critics.
Yeah. I mean, I viewed Jay Cutler as a good quarterback last year. I'd be happy to rely on him at many points during the season. It's just whether he can, you know, at least stay at the same level as last year, if not take a step forward from that. Any steps back from that...
Well, the majority of the criticism seemed to be aimed at him for going out of that championship game the year before. And I stand by my viewpoint on that was simply, you couldn't question his toughness, because he got battered all year. He took over 50 sacks.
That's a lot of hits of a lot of big people.
And that's not even including the many, many, many hits that he took over the course of the season where he wasn't sacked. He was brutalized.
He took a hell of a lot of hits.
He might as well have been playing behind the bloody wet paper bag, to be honest.
The thing I also didn't understand is they came out, you know, the injury was announced, he had like a tear of one of his ligaments in his knee.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, he could have played on it. No.
No,
he couldn't. Did you see the pass rush that the Packers were getting in that game? You've got a damaged knee. Do you want BJ Raji falling on you? Or Clay Matthews hitting you? No.
No, thank you. No.
You go and you sit on your little bench and you have your little hat. So, now we'll move on to...
The one Dave's been waiting for all week.
Oh. Yeah, Dave's second favourite team in the league.
Oh,
Detroit Lions.
Gonna love those bloody Lions. Well, I mean, the Lions have got question marks in a few places. The fact that they've gone ahead and slapped the franchise tag on Cliff Avril means they haven't got quite so much room for free agency.
They have major cap problems right now. They're trying to get Megatron to redo his deal because he hit so many incentives last year. I think he counts for 22% of their cap. Something ridiculous. Him, Matthew Stafford and Sue, I think, account for something like close to 50% of the team's cap right now.
That's incredible. That is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, would you say that's a reflection on bad management and ownership?
No, it's a reflection of how broken the old draft system was. You've got to bear in mind, this we're talking about a number one pick, two number two picks here. And because of the old system, you know, these guys were being paid ridiculous. Man, when Stafford came in, he got the highest deal a quarterback had ever signed, which is ridiculous. Sue, same situation. Megatron, similar. He didn't get quite as much.
Although he's probably going to be after as much.
Well, he's got so much, he's getting loads next year because he had all these incentives built into his contract, and last year he hit every single one. So
they owe him the money. Owe him the money.
So yeah, he'll restructure his deal. I've got little doubt in my mind, but they still won't have too much to work with, and Avril's a big chunk of that money now as well. So
I think what they're essentially going to try and do is keep as much of their 2011 team together as they can, and then, you know, there'll just be small parts that they'll be looking to fix with. I mean, I haven't really looked at what they'd be looking to do in the draft.
There's plenty that D needs. They're much like the Vikings in the secondary. They've got Louis Delmas and nothing else. Expect them to make a run at pretty much every free agent corner available. Finnegan, absolutely, because Jim Schwartz knows him from his time in Tennessee. Delmas is an okay safety. They need backers, especially because I really doubt they'll be able to re-sign Stephen Tulloch. He was their only good linebacker for the most part, although Bobby Carpenter played surprisingly well at times last year. But you know, they need their front four is fine, they are sorted on the D line, but the rest of the D, they could any round, you know, first round, second round, third round, they could pick any of those positions and be totally justified in doing so.
It's
that depressing, I think, if you look at that D.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as I'm really not a fan of the Lions, you can't deny that they've got the potential in that D to be as dominant as possibly. You know, I mean,
don't have the tools yet. I mean, the D-line, I love that D-line.
Yeah, I mean, you've got their front four is pretty much set for the next 5-6 years. What they've got to do is build around that, and they've got to add
Byron Vandenbosch. Get a replacement for Vandenbosch. It's not just, I think, the first one for. It's the backups. They've got some good players on the bench behind them. They've got real depth there. Sammy Lee Hill, good player. Corey Williams and Sue at tackle. That's a good three-man rotation.
Yeah, especially once Sue has stamped on someone else and then they bring in the rotation, it's not all that different.
You want Nick Fairley as well.
Forget Nick Fairley. That's a ridiculous combination of pass-rushing tackles. I mean, that's mad. I mean, Sue and Fairley actually impressed me last year as well. It wasn't amazing, but he showed me some real flashes of potential. Him and Sue could be an absolutely terrifying combination. And then you look offensively. And
well, I mean, you say
the passing game was good.
Yeah, I mean, Stafford kind of broke his little. Lots of rumours about him being a glass cannon. It appears that no, he can take some hits, he can stay healthy. Obviously there is still that lingering question, will he remain healthy next year? But I mean, I'd say as far as offence goes, they can be reasonably happy that they have a quarterback that isn't really going to go down.
I never bought into the fragility thing with Stafford, simply because, having watched the Lions for a number of years, that O-line is atrocious. A quarterback is going to get killed behind that thing. They need to go O-line in the draft, to be honest, I think, because they need to play to the strength of that team right now. They need to focus on being an offensive juggernaut that can get after the passer with their front four. That's probably the way to go. Get some more protection for Stafford. Megatron is an absolute monster. I mean,
yes, he is.
Goes and without saying.
As proven last year with Stafford's, time after time passing to him.
Didn't impress me to like the Pro Bowl kind of level of what I would consider a Pro Bowl caliber season. His numbers are enormous, but that's because of they ran the ball so little.
Yeah.
Do you remember watching Lions games last year? How many times would they run the ball? Less than 16?
Yeah, what a run game.
Yeah, once Jarvid Best went down with that concussion, and he's a real concern for the rest of his career. That's like the third major concussion that he suffered, and the one that he suffered in college was the reason that he fell so far to them. So he's a real worry. But they will get Mikel LeSure back next year, who was their second round running back they picked up last year, who missed the whole season with a torn ACL. He's a opposite of Jarvid Best. He's a real power back, so he can make that offense. If him and Best come back fully healthy, that offense could be terrifying in the skill positions, especially if they can go get another receiver across from Megatron.
Yeah. They have not got the cap room to go to go after one of the big free agents, so I mean perhaps they're going to have to take a leap of faith on one of the lower draft picks.
I think you can as well, though, with the Lions, because of like the attention Megatron commands, and as well as the fact Pettigrew's fairly decent tight end. He's a bit inconsistent, his hands aren't as good as you'd like, because you know those are the two guys teams will focus on. If you can just go get one of them sort of
mid-tiers,
not even necessarily, just a mid-tier kind of free agent, I think, you know, he'll do better than he would with a lot of other teams, just because he's going to have that freedom, because, you know, Calvin Johnson is going to be shade-covered every play. You cannot leave Calvin Johnson one-on-one, because we saw what happens last year. Stafford doesn't even think about throwing to anyone else. He sees Calvin Johnson one-on-one with anybody, he's just going to launch it up there, and frankly,
let Calvin Johnson get it.
If the pass is remotely accurate, that's going to be the end result.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they can't do much for free agency. It's just a case, to me, I think, O-line.
Yep.
And DBs. And if so, I think they'll be a good team again next year. But I
hope not.
I think the Bears will be better. I think they may struggle to make the playoffs. I think the Bears are just a better rounded team.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's quite a difficult division, really. Especially when you're fronted and led by the Green Bay Packers, sitting there on top of that division.
Look at the quarterbacks in that division. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, Stafford, Ponda, and Cutler. They're all still fairly young.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they could all be there dueling for like the next 7-8 years easily.
Yeah, indeed.
Could be an epic little rivalry. Speaking of Aaron Rodgers, we'll move on to the MVP's team.
MVP
of the mighty 15-1 Packers. Yeah, what is there to really say? Aaron Rodgers,
the
amazing
was,
last year. Possibly the best season I've ever seen a quarterback have.
Yeah.
He was unbelievable. The accuracy that he showed me last year was just nuts. That back shoulder throw to Jordy Nelson. My goodness.
How many times did we see that last year, though? Like
every
Jordy
game.
Nelson, every
game. It had happened at least once. Crucial third down, you know what's coming. Back shoulder throw to Jordy Nelson that you just can't defend.
That's why I loved having him on my fantasy team.
I mean
one of the good things that the Packers have done straight away is they've addressed the Jermichael Finley issue by straight away saying, nope, you're going to be ours. So that is now sort of nipped in the bud.
Yeah, that offense is going to be good again next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't really expect that offense to decline. It's the defense is where the questions have really been.
The D was horrible last year.
That's where the question marks are. The offense is fine. The offense does not really need anything changed.
Dominant unit.
The only thing that may change is Matt Flynn will probably go elsewhere. He is probably going to go elsewhere, but lucky for those teams that get him. Anyway, leaves them with defensive questions. And I mean,
a lot of them.
I mean, where would you say they're the main focus on defense should be for the Packers?
Their secondary.
The what?
Their secondary.
I'd actually say, Avenant, that a pass rush to compliment Clay Matthews. Other teams, they just concentrate on Clay Matthews, and his numbers dropped quite a lot last year.
Yeah, but yeah.
If you look
at it,
he had no help. Teams just double covered him, sometimes triple covered him, and there's only so much a guy can do. Yeah. They really need someone else on the other side just to help him out that a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, the secondary, I can agree with. Because the corners, when they won the Super Bowl, were superb. Tremont Williams, Woodson, who was the other one, Sam Shields, they played exceptionally well, especially in the playoff run.
Yeah.
And last year they weren't to that same standard. They really missed Nick Collins.
Yeah, they did.
Safety. really missed him. I think that was kind of underplayed. So they do need that help. But Raji had a really poor year.
Yeah, he did. Not. I don't think anyone was really expecting that. I certainly wasn't expecting Raji to have a poor year. I mean, Raji was a very good player in their little...
He was good. He was not as good as, you know, people would have had you believe.
Yeah.
He was overhyped, but he was a productive player that
he
year.
He was.
Last year, he just played really poorly.
He just seemed quite lazy.
Yeah.
Switched off.
They missed Cullen Jenkins more than I think they may have thought they would, because he seemed to be... The pass rush when they did win that Super Bowl came from Raji, Matthews and Jenkins.
Yeah.
Raji had a down year, Jenkins wasn't there, and they just didn't replace that pass rush.
No.
They struggled stopping the run again because Raji had such a substandard year. The backers aren't great.
No, I mean,
Clay.
Yeah, I'd say the question marks they're really looking at are on the defensive line for a start. Outside linebacker, and if Wells leaves, they suddenly need a centre.
Word is, though, they're interested in getting Chris Myers from Houston if Scott Myers doesn't re-sign, which is a bit unfair in that he was quite possibly the best centre in the league last year. So
lucky Packers. In theory, lucky Packers.
I would be shocked if the Texans let him go. Shocked. Especially seeing how good that O-line was.
Yeah,
I mean,
but other than that, the Packers are pretty much are still a cemented team. There's no
Packers,
reason.
Yeah, it's
there's no reason that they couldn't go 14-2 next season.
Offensive line was solid.
Yeah,
really much improved over the Super Bowl year. Belaga really started to play well. They could do a replacement for Clifton.
Yeah,
Josh Sitton's a top quality guard.
Their wide receivers,
the receiving core,
excellent.
Amazing.
So you know, and the fact that Greg Jennings is healed or on his way to being totally healed now. The Packers are one of the teams with the fewest question marks in the league.
Offensively, yeah.
Offensively. Defensively, they do have things that need to be addressed.
They can probably
get by with not having a very good draft or not having a great deal in free agency.
They'll be much like, you know, the Saints have been for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's just, can you stop our offense? If you can't, we're going to win.
Yeah.
Same with the Pats, actually. They're just one of those teams, the offense will win them games on its own. And as we saw in the two losses that they had last year, in the playoffs and regular season, those were the two games where the offense just didn't perform.
Yeah.
Drop balls, badly run routes, and that's what ended up costing them. You need a little bit of D.
Yeah. Obviously, as a defensive guy, I think you need a hell of a lot of D. But yeah, as the Packers go, they don't need much D in order to become... I mean, they were so close. I mean, 15-1 after that season.
They
do only need a couple of positions, really, to step up on defense. And suddenly, there's no reason they can't go 16-0.
They can go all the way.
Exactly, they can go all the way. But it does depend on what they do address on their defense.
I still think that the Packers last year, all they were doing was playing catch-up. It was that offense that led them. I mean, there was one point where the Vikings were beating them in the fourth quarter, and Aaron Rodgers went, "There you go, done."
Yeah,
we win.
That happened a good few times.
Yeah, it was just them playing catch up.
Them and the Patriots pretty much mirrored each other last year.
Yeah,
in it was just the Brady and Aaron Rodgers show.
With poor defenses.
Yeah, really poor play from the D in every regard. Because
yeah.
the year before they gave up yards, but they were quite good against the run. Last year they couldn't stop anything.
Yeah.
Teams were doing whatever they wanted against that D.
It's an interesting situation because there have been teams in the history of the NFL who have had nothing on offense, but such an elite D that nothing could get through. And this time we're looking at two teams like the Patriots and the Packers where they've got a ridiculous offense and very little on defense.
There's the two ways of sort of building a team these days.
Yeah, offensively or defensively.
Offensively, I think you need the quarterback first.
Yeah.
If you get the quarterback, then you can think out. If you've got one of them top guys, then yeah, you can do that. If not, that's why I'm always a big believer in building a D
and
a run game, because you can get by with injuries. You know, if you run that sort of thing, if Brady goes down, Rodgers goes down, there you go, no more Super Bowl for you. It's not happening. That's why I'm always a bigger believer in defence and run game, just because your players become more replaceable, cheaper on the salary cap.
Yeah.
And it's less painful to watch as a fan. It's
indeed
tough watching a team that can't play D. I really really dislike it. I wasn't used to it.
It's right. One day, the Bucks hopefully will be back to that standard, but one day.
Alright, good effort, guys. I think that should wraps up the NFC North fairly well.
Yep, I think so.
Yeah, it's going to be predictable. I figure the standings there next year. Vikings are probably going to hold everyone else up.
Yeah.
Packers got to be the favourites, and we'll see what goes on with the Bears and the Lions.
Yeah, I think the Lions have got the potential there to, you know, to get to number two in that division. At the same time, the Bears as well, if the Bears make certain good moves, they could also be there at the number two position. So I think we're looking for an exciting year from the NFC, from the NFC North next year.
Going to see some shootouts.
Absolutely, yeah.
So have a good one, guys. Catch us again next week. This is the X's and O's podcast. If you haven't already, it's a good one. You get to learn about the Fire Zone. Anyone have any sort of final words they want to add?
If there's anything you want discussed next week, again, just let me know and we'll see if we've got time to fill it in.
Yeah, you can get a hold of us via, obviously, via the Podomatic website, or we're, the four of us are quite active on the NFL UK site. You can also get hold of us that way as well. Send in your messages, send in your opinions. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Let us know what your opinions are on subjects that we haven't yet covered. You know, give us your input. We, you know, we definitely want to hear from you.
Yeah, most importantly, thank you so much for all the downloads and all the great feedback we've had from you guys. Much appreciated. Makes us want to keep doing this.
Really impressed with how it's gone so far. So yeah, we are all incredibly grateful. So have a great week, guys, and check us out again next week.
The words of Admiral Akbar, it's a wrap.